Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's good Memorial Day weekend. Thanks for being with us. Chris Cortman, SunDevilSource.com publisher. There's a couple surveys that have come out around college football. And the ranking of college football coaches, and I have a ton of respect for Chris. He will be with us to talk about that. Also some Arizona State football and basketball stuff, as we are very college-centric here on the show. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Goody at the Movies will be with us. We ran into each other the other night at Tomorrowland. Not literally at Tomorrowland, but watching the movie Tomorrowland. And I thought it was okay. I don't know if Bill thought it was over the top or not. I didn't hear many laughs from the critics that were there, but the audience itself laughed and laughed and laughed. So, and it comes out here on this Memorial Day weekend. Also, he wanted to talk about I'll See You in My Dreams, which I think he mentioned a couple weeks ago that was really good. So we'll talk to Goody at the Movies. Let's get you caught up some things on my mind in the world of sports, brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino, just outside of Pine Top, in the beautiful White Mountains. On this Memorial Day long holiday weekend, why not get on out and enjoy yourself and make plans for a couple of weeks from now at the Honda Resort and Casino, the 18th annual Powwow in the Pines, June 6th and 7th at the Honda Festival Grounds. Lots of great entertainment there. Over $39,500 in prize money, includes over $9,000 for the drum contest. That is June 6th and 7th, 18th annual Powwow in the Pines at the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino, just outside of Pine Top. What a great Memorial Day weekend getaway to head up to the Honda Resort and Casino anywhere around the state, or you take in sports360az.com and check it out at the Honda Resort and Casino, just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. I mentioned that there's some college football stuff that I've wanted to get caught up with Chris Cortman for quite some time. And the college football playoff, let's get to this first. Tony Barnhart, who's one of the best in the business at college football, released this last week that the first college football playoff rankings are going to be released Tuesday, November 3rd. Final rankings Sunday, December 6th. 6 weeks of rankings. Now, Eric, you hate these rankings. You felt like it kind of took everybody the wrong direction and was misleading. I remember I had Bill Hancock on, and Bill talked about this. It seems to me that the television ratings and revenue is so great that you're just flat wrong, and you've got to deal with this. So
I understand why they do it. I understand why they do it.
Yeah.
Is it completely necessary? No.
Sure it is.
No, it's not.
Fill a bank account. Of course it is. Got to build houses, mansions, pave town cars. Of course it is.
Could you start it in mid-November instead of early October?
What's the point? Two more weeks of this stuff. You can't tell me that on Sunday, December 6th, or rather Tuesday, November 3rd, that on that Tuesday night, November 3rd, that you're not going to want to see where your beloved Frogs are coming in.
Of course.
By then, you'll be out of it, right?
I'm such a junkie. We were in Fry's yesterday, Brad, and I strolled away from my wife to go over the magazine section because the college football porn should be hitting the – it should be – honestly, it should be hitting newsstands always right around the beginning of June.
Right.
Just kind of peeked around the corner to see if there's any out there yet, but not yet. So, of course, I'm excited for the football season, but I think that these rankings can be – really misleading and just a big money grab ratings grab.
Well, it's like the sporting news. Okay, so the sporting news has gone into the tact of let's rank all of the college football coaches. When it is the dead of the offseason in college football, and there's a lot of college football that we do here. That's one of the main items, one of the main ventricles to sports360az.com is the college. Nobody's really grabbed it by the horns, and we've come along, and that's what we're doing. The sporting news decided to rank the coaches across the country. And of course, in the South, this is a bigger deal than it is out West. But for me, as I see our audience continue to grow with college fans, I think it's worth talking about. Urban Meyer, according to the sporting news, is now ranked the best coach in the nation, and Nick Saban number two. It's pretty hard to argue against that, given what Urban Meyer did this last year. People in the South will never give credit to anybody on the West or the East or the North. And quite frankly, in the East Coast, college football is not as big a deal as it is out here in the West, as it is down in the South or in the Midwest. It's just not. They also rank the college football coaches by conference. And this is what I found interesting, one of the things I want to talk to Chris Cortman about. So David Shaw was ranked as the number one coach in the Pac-12, and I can buy that. I think David Shaw is terrific. I think whenever I've seen Stanford play and just how they go about their program, when you consider some of the academic limitations that they have, and there'll be those at other schools that snicker and laugh at that. Oh, they get guys in that shouldn't get in. Everybody gets guys in that shouldn't get in, okay? But I do think when you look at what Stanford is within the conference, that David Shaw is more than the number one overall guy in my mind. He is far reaching ahead of the others, given what he has to work with. Beyond that, though, I think there's wide open debate. And some of this is, do you rank Mark Helfrich at Oregon fifth? Because you're going to get all the Oregon Duck fans upset. Of course you are. And they're going to talk more about your product and have more people go click on it. That's the little click games that people play. But I do think that I'm bringing this to the attention of the ASU and the U of A fans. In this poll, Chris Peterson at Washington was ranked number two. Chris Peterson this last year had, what was it, three or four first-round draft picks on the defensive side of the football? Quite a bit. He's only in his second season. Pretty hard for me to say that's the second best coach within the conference. Jim Moore is ranked third. I don't know. Some weeks I'd see UCLA play, and they were all over the roadmap. Rich Rod is ranked fourth. Well, is that because in-state he beat ASU this last year, so you rank him ahead of Todd Graham? Helfrich is fifth. You're saying, well, where's Todd Graham in all this stuff? He's won back-to-back 10-win seasons. Where is he? Gary Anderson is sixth. Wait a second. Gary Anderson? Gary Anderson hasn't even coached a game yet at Oregon State.
And that's part of the problem with these lists. I mean, Chris Peterson's a great football coach. He has 1 year on his Pac-12 resume.
Without his own players.
Exactly. How can we accurately judge? It does. It makes for great debate. That's what we're doing right now.
Sure.
But all these little lists are kind of skewed because everyone's going to have their own opinions.
Well, and is it also skewed to bring in more audience? Todd Graham came in seventh. Okay. Do I think he's the seventh best coach? I think he's better than Sarkisian, who came in at eighth. I know this is fact. Whenever ASU played Washington with Sarkisian up there, they relished playing them. This last year was the Jail Mary, so you can't say that ASU did anything out of the ordinary or really outcoached them. They got very, 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 very lucky on the final play of the game. But it was drawn up and it was executed, so you give him that advantage. Rich Rod, for what he's done in Tucson, I think it's just more of the, can you believe Rich Rod has finally taken a football program that's done nothing through the years? The next time they go to the Rose Bowl, other than play UCLA, will be the first time that they go to the Rose Bowl. U of A fans know this, okay? So they get all excited about it. Do I think Rich Rod is a better coach than Mark Helfrich? Well, I don't know. U of A beat Oregon during the regular season, what is it, twice? And then they got smoked by them in the Pac-12 title game. I agree with David Shaw, but beyond that, I have a hard time looking at the conference. And I think in the Pac-12 South, because the Pac-12 South, outside of the SEC West, is the best division within college football. Even if you're a big-time Big Ten fan, you can give me Urban Meyer, you can give me D'Antonio. Beyond that, am I going to get excited about anybody else within the Big Ten Conference? No, I'm not.
Where did Kyle Whittingham come in on that list?
I don't have it beyond eight.
Okay. Again,
he's pretty good.
He's very good.
He's pretty good.
And he helped transition Utah from a Mountain West school into a Pac-12 school, and they're on the up and up as a program. So, again, these lists are just
fodder. Mike Leach is lower, too. And Mike Leach was viewed as a terrific guru, this, that.
Still, work in progress, though. It takes, you know.
No, I mean, you're taking on a program that's just a train wreck. What are you going to do?
I mean, there was nothing there when he took over.
No.
Nothing.
I also think in the college football world this year, it's going to be interesting that we may have three of the four Final Four teams from last year all starting graduate transfer quarterbacks. Coker at Alabama, Golson at Florida State, Vernon Adams at Oregon. How big of a trend is this, and how big of a concern is it when you take players like that and just move them around as mercenaries, so to speak? So that's on my mind. There's some college basketball. This story with John Calipari, I'm going to save it for later in the show because I want some time on this. But I'll just tease it as such that Calipari, earlier this past week, gave a speech to 3,000 business executives after receiving a humanitarian award at Rupp Arena. And in the course of his 15-minute speech, Calipari said, you may think, this was his quote, you may think our goal was to win a national title or win all the games, but it was to get 8 players drafted. Now, not win a title, not win all the games, but to get 8 players drafted. That was his goal. Is he giving a recruiting pitch? Of course he is. That's what kids want to hear. And we're going to talk about this a little bit further because this has caused quite a storm back there. There's some NBA stuff, too, on the show I want to get to today. The first team All-NBA was announced this last week, and Marc Gasol was on this team. And to my, this is a mistake on my part. I left Marc Gasol out as one of the names that the Suns should be looking at. And there's some news around Marc Gasol and some speculation around Marc Gasol that I want to get to, because what if the Lakers decide we are going to go sign Marc Gasol? We could take that number 2 pick and we could trade it to Sacramento for DeMarcus Cousins. And then we could have Kobe Bryant. And this is all doable. This is not pie in the sky, and this is out there today. So I want to get into that a little bit later on as well as the show moves on. Sports360AZ.com. AZ Central Sports. We join you Monday through Friday for a couple of hours, and then our website, 24 hours, 7 days a week. Check it out. Lots of Arizona sports content and some national stuff too. Sports360AZ.com. Chris Cartman on the other side.
Like our Facebook fan page for unique Arizona sports content from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/Sports360AZ.
Chris Cartman joins us now for a couple of minutes. SunDevilSource.com publisher. If you've not bookmarked that, you really should. SunDevilSource.com publisher, good friend of the show. Always good to have him on. Respect his opinion a great deal. If the season started today in college football, ASU opening up with Texas A&M, where would you rank the Devils nationally?
That's a good question. I think it's kind of hard to say because I don't follow it probably as much as some of the national pundits do. I know the Pac-12 really well. I would say ASU probably should be somewhere in the 10 to 20 range. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good team. They have some question marks, obviously, on both sides of the ball. But from a potency standpoint on the offensive side, it's hard to imagine that they won't be very competitive and in the vast majority of all their games. And so I don't think you can really forecast anything less than probably 9 wins. And that's, you know, good enough to be a team that's at least probably in the teens. So I would say probably somewhere in that range, not higher than 10 and not a fringe top 25 team either.
Where would you put them in the Pac-12 South today if the season started?
I would say second. I think USC's talent is quite excellent. The coaching there still is a drag, I think, on their ability to be successful, and we'll see if they're able to take a step in a positive direction for the Trojans, and so that's to be determined. But I would say from a talent standpoint and given the scheduling and some of these other factors, I would say ASU's probably second, but I think that's almost a toss-up at this point in time.
The SEC West or the Pac-12 South, which is the tougher division?
Wow. That's an interesting question. I think in terms of the overall level of talent, the SEC West, I think the Pac-12 coaching has now taken it to a place where it's very competitive. It might be the best coached league in the country. I think the offense is certainly better in the Pac-12, and people always tend to maybe gravitate towards that, especially fans and media. There's maybe extra level of excitement to it. But I don't think the talent is ever going to be better than the SEC West. And it depends on the metric that you use to maybe make that determination. But that's a neck-and-neck battle, certainly in terms of NFL production. It's pretty close. And I think if you took some of those SEC teams and you put them in the Pac-12, they would struggle and vice versa because SEC teams coming west, they're not used to that level of offensive potency and capability. Pac-12 teams would probably struggle more to score points. So it'd be interesting if they could somehow figure out a way to do that, but or maybe even in a simulation type of a situation.
Just over 100 days till that game, by the way, ASU-Texas A&M. Should ASU be the road dog or the road favorite?
I think you got to have Texas A&M as the favorite, not by much, probably by a field goal. It's going to be, for all intent and purposes, even though the game's on College Station, it's going to be a home game for them. I'm sure ASU will travel well, as it has tended to do to these types of games, maybe have as many as 10,000 to 15,000 fans there. But just given the fact that Texas A&M it has been one of the more prominent college football teams in the last couple years, Kevin Sumlin's jaw performance has been probably on par with Todd Graham overall. And given how challenging that league is and the competition there, I don't think you could put ASU as a favorite going into that game.
Talking with Chris Cartman, SunDevilSource.com, publisher for a couple of minutes, Sports360AZ.com. We also partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. We're in this time of year in May where there's lists that are out. The Sporting News just ranked their coaches. They had Urban Meyer number one, Nick Saban number two. That's fine. They went through the conferences, though, and it's all subjective, Chris. They had David Shaw's number one, and I find it hard to argue with that choice. They had Rich Rod at four and Todd Graham at seven. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I really hate coaching rankings in general because it's not an equal playing field in terms of where these coaches operate from. Certainly, if you're Stanford and you're replacing Jim Harbaugh and you have the academic advantage that David Shaw has, he should do really well, right? And so are we talking about how the talent acquisition, the evaluating, recruiting cachet, the game management on the field? Are we talking about game preparation? I think you have coaches that have strengths and weaknesses. And to rank somebody first and somebody 12th, it shows a much greater disparity than actually exists between coaches. So what I like to do is I like to evaluate coaches in four or five different types of categories. And when I've done that in the past, I think you see a greater idea of how close that it really is in tiers. David Shaw should be in the first tier. Todd Graham should be in the first tier. I think Whittingham is an underrated coach, despite the fact that he's been in some trouble at Utah, given the fact that it's much harder to acquire talent there. And then I think at USC and UCLA, it's so much easier to get talent because of their proximity to it and their historical success in that regard, and their academic prestige. I think those coaches have to do better than a Todd Graham or Utah or Washington in order to really impress me. So I think you have to factor in all those things, but I would say that generally speaking, I like Graham. I think Mora's done a really good job. I think David Shaw should be in that top group. Helfrich, to me, I think we're going to know a lot more now that Marcus Mariota is not there.
Yeah, I agree on that.
And how he does moving forward. I think it's going to be awesome to see what happens at Washington now, because they have one of the coaches who was the best non-Power 5 conference coaches in the country, and now is he going to be able to replicate that at Washington, where they have a good fan base and some other things going for them, a new stadium, et cetera. But I don't like, especially the way it's typically done, coaching ranking.
You didn't mention Rich Rod at all.
Well, I think he's good. I would probably put him in the second tier. I think he had a great season. I think they've had an interesting strategy, which is basically to not really compete for as many of the top-tier kids and trust their evaluation. I think that's kind of self-limiting in the long run, because when you're taking 23-star kids and you're going up against UCLA, USC, Oregon, Stanford, and now an emerging ASU for more talent, are you going to bump up against the ceiling? Because the coaching is also good at some of these places, and so I'm interested to see how that plays out. So if I'm factoring those things into the equation, I'm not sure, but I like Rodriguez a lot structurally from a game planning, management, and schematic thing. And if you lean toward those elements of the game as a coach, I rank him a little bit higher. And if you lean towards other things, I rank him a little bit lower. And that's why I say that for me, it's kind of a nebulous thing.
Chris Cartman, SunDevilSource.com publisher. Do you, we'll just go over this for a minute or two. I don't want to go too far on this, but I am curious your view on these, the trend of the starting graduate transfer quarterback. You've got Golson now going to Florida State, Coker going to Alabama, Vernon Adams up at Oregon. We'll see if Adams ends up being the guy it sounds like he's going to be. What's your view on this?
Well, it's a dicey situation, I think, for some of these schools, because the biggest hurdle, I think, for players is the offensive assimilation and their knowledge base into the scheme and what they're doing, and then having a good feel for their personnel. And those things, they take a lot of time, in my experience, to really assimilate. So I'm going to be really interested to see how this plays out, because as you mentioned, it's becoming more in vogue, but I don't know that it's been demonstrated that that's something that we're programs have had much success with, because it just hasn't been done that much. So I think there are some potential major hiccups, and also I think there's reasons why these kids have transferred. If you look at like Golson, for example, he and Kelly, they really didn't see eye to eye on some things. I think that Brian Kelly was very frustrated with him in certain areas, or his tendencies on certain types of throws or managing their offense. And so a lot of these quarterbacks also, Brad, they have their own question marks that are lingering. And when you couple that with the new environment and all those challenges, I think there's a lot of headwinds that could potentially exist. And fan expectations are going to be really high, especially for some of these kids that are more high profile. And that's also something that could prove problematic.
Sure. I mean, you could make the argument, why can't Oregon find a quarterback to back up Marcus Mariota and they have to go poach a kid away from Eastern Washington? And I think that's a very fair argument that some coaches have brought up. We're talking with Chris Cartman for a couple of minutes. Let's switch over to Bobby Hurley. Okay, so my initial impressions of him and the basketball program is, and I had Ray on this last week, they're not tolerating these just pathetic schedules that they've had for years and years and years, and we hear the same old line and same old excuses that's behind them, which I'm happy to hear. He, in Bobby Hurley, is going out. He's put together a staff that can go recruit nationally. Are they going to land maker? Are they going to get some of these number one, number two kids in the nation? Do they have a shot here at Bagley? These are all questions that I'm getting now that Hurley's in place. What about you?
Yeah, I think that remains to be seen, of course. But Von Maker, they're definitely top two or three school for. I think it's going to be, at the end of the day, ASU and Kentucky, probably. Some people say Indiana's in the mix. Brian Merritt, who, of course, works for Bobby Hurley, he's very connected into the personal relationships around Maker. And that's, at the end of the day, what it really comes down to, especially in the clean recruitment, because there is a lot of college basketball where it's not really exactly on the up and up.
Really?
Yeah. As
shocking.
You know.
Stunning.
Yeah, exactly.
Revelation.
I sense sarcasm, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but so if you're going to run a clean operation, do I think ASU is all of a sudden going to start landing a bunch of elite kids? No, because that would have happened before. I mean, like I said, it comes down to relationships. There's not that many people who have the type of extensive personal interactions with that many mentors, parents, high school coaches, AAU coaches, to where it's going to set them apart from everybody else. Otherwise, those people probably would already be operating at a very high level successfully in college basketball in terms of talent acquisition. Because talent, at the end of the day, that's the number one thing that determines success. But historical prestige of university, relationships, and then after that, probably I would say people that are willing to maybe fudge the rules a little bit on some things. That's what leads to success. It's too early to say, are some of these super high profile recruitments going to be totally clean? If they are, what ASU's odds are. We've never even seen Bobby Hurley play a season, so you can't talk really about what's going to happen with Marvin Bagley. He's got three more years of high school to go. He's probably going to be the number one or number two kid in that class nationally. Everyone's going to want him, just like everyone wants Thon Maker. But there just happened to be with Maker some personal relationships that have put ASU in an interesting situation. Now, maybe they're going to be able to develop that with a local guy like Bagley, and we'll see if he remains a Corona or what happens with him over the next couple of years. But I think you're going to have infrastructural success. You're going to have to develop yourself regionally. Adidas is going to help ASU basketball because the only school in the West that is Adidas-sponsored is UCLA, and there's a lot more grassroots programs that are Adidas, and Adidas really wants to drive kids from their grassroots to college to get those kids back for endorsement deals as professionals. So there is some synergy going on right now, but they need infrastructural success. They need to get Wells Fargo redone. They need to ultimately be able to pay a competitive wage for their head coach. Right now they're paying Bobby Hurley $1.2 million. The average Sweet 16 coach last year was making over $3 million. So there's a huge gap that still needs to happen, and you need to fix those things in terms of your operational ability and your capability. There are some really good things to sell. I think Hurley resonates with people and will get the conversations going in maybe an easier way. I think he has a type of a personality that's kind of dynamic with recruits as far as like how he'll resonate with those guys. And he relates to them on a really good level, I would say. But it's going to be a long road. I would look much more at incremental progress over the long term than anything that's going to be some rapid ascension.
No, and I agree with that, but I do think that you just look at his talent acquisition so far, and it reads good, okay? Sounds good. I like that they've upgraded their schedule tremendously over the slop that we had seen for years and years, and that there's no more excuses on that front. So I feel good about a lot of things that are going on over there, but I'm in agreement with you that, you know, you got to let this thing percolate, and it is going to take some time. I appreciate your time as always, and we'll talk soon. Thanks.
Thanks for having me, Brad.
You got it. Chris Cartman, sundevilsource.com. Good stuff there. So John Calipari decided to talk about how putting guys in the NBA is more important than winning games or national championships. This is not sitting well in Kentucky, and I want to get to that on the other side. Good at the Movies, too, on this Memorial Day weekend. You want to make sure you get on out and enjoy some of the movies that are out there. Good at the Movies and much more as we continue on. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. Hope you're enjoying your Memorial Day long weekend. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. Brad Sussmat with you. Monday through Friday, we do our thing. And then, of course, we're on the web 24-7 with our site, sports360az.com. Content on the college, high school, pro, no particular order, things that we see that are very Arizona-centric. We do some national stuff as well that we work in with Peter King every week. The Monday Morning Quarterback joins us from Sports Illustrated. Pedro Gomez, ESPN Baseball Insider, joins us every week. Michael Fabiano from the NFL Network as we do fantasy football. It's a big part of what we do. And then we do a lot of video, lots of video. We've been doing it since 2011, getting after it day in, day out, and having fun doing it. Appreciate you joining us. John Calipari. So this is one of those stories that I would like some context on this as I was reading the first part of it. And so I'll bring this to you and just give you an idea of where fans are, because this sounds absolutely asinine off the top. John Calipari's players first recruiting philosophy and the Kentucky fan base thirst for a championship clashed again earlier this week when the Wildcat coach addressed a crowd of 3,000 business executives after he received a humanitarian award at Rupp Arena. So Calipari does a 15-minute speech here, and he came up with a bombshell that he dropped on these 3,000 business executives. Now, you have to understand, contextually, we're talking about Kentucky basketball. This is not Arizona State basketball or even Arizona basketball. It's Kentucky. Kentucky, okay? So he said this, quote, "Last year we started the season with a goal. You may think it was to win a national title or to win all the games, but it was to get 8 players drafted. Well, how can you be about your team if you're worried about getting players drafted? We kind of work it the other way. What are your dreams? What are you looking for? What are you trying to get out of life? How can we help you with that?" Quoting John Calipari, "For me, The mission for me is to be a vehicle to help others reach their dreams, to be the stone that creates the ripple in their lives that goes on and on and on. Now, in our state, they want my mission to be win national titles, win national titles. My mission is bigger than that. So he's basically saying, read between the lines here as I hold up my three fingers. Kentucky had five players selected in the first round of the 2010 NBA draft. Kentucky upset longtime fans and former players by proclaiming it being the biggest day in the history of Kentucky's program when that happened. Biggest day in the history of Kentucky basketball when five players were drafted. Not that when they won titles or anything like that. Somebody told me they are going to call it the Blue Room instead of the Green Room, Calipari told reporters that day in 2010. So, John Calipari is valuing individual achievements more than team accomplishments. And what I think John Calipari is doing here is actually very, very smart. Because the big time, the big cigar alum wants to win national titles. We understand that. But if you're going to attract not one, not two, not five, but eight of the best players across the country, the message has to be so outside the box that a high school kid would say, he's going to get me to the NBA. That is more important to me than winning titles. In this era of club basketball that we are in, and fortunately, I think it's starting to take a change and a twist to get away from the crapola that has been out there for years and years in club ball. Club ball really has turned into something to make money off of parents that have the money and have people that have no business running club tournaments, making money hand over fist, being sketch. I've seen more sketchy club tournaments and sketch people in the club basketball scene than any other sport. Club basketball is the worst. Worst. Easily volleyball, swimming, club soccer, all much, much better. Not to say that there aren't improprieties that take place or there's not the crazy parent or people that are over the top. But a lot of these kids, they don't want to win a title as much as they want to just get to the NBA. And if you cut through all the layers, somebody told me that when when Herb Sendek was at ASU, and I like Herb a lot, but he would tell parents when parents would bring their kids there, Herb would tell them, we're very excited to have your son here, and he's going to be here the next 4 or 5 years, and we're going to make sure he graduates with a degree. And for some of those kids, that's not what they wanted to hear. Mommy and daddy did not want to hear that. What they wanted to hear is, we're going to get him ready for the NBA. Let's cut through all the nonsense. This isn't me speaking on this. That's just the view. Let's cut through the nonsense that this is all about getting a degree. No, we want the seven-figure check. That's the way it works. Do fans have a right to be irritated whenever Calipari insists championships are secondary to him? I think that they should be. Sure they should. If Todd Graham came out and said, we're not going to win, we don't care about winning or titles in football, all we care about is getting kids to the NFL, and if he's able to produce it year in and year out, then nobody's going to have a problem with that. Nobody's going to have a problem with that. Then there's this story that came out. Do we have the slide, Eric, or not? Okay, it's fine. So today, just today, as I was sitting down to do the show, LSU puts out a billboard today of the top high school basketball player in the nation. This player is going to go to LSU in the fall, and they're putting him on a billboard and all their advertising already. He's chosen to wear the number 25, and the headline is 25 is coming. They're going to put billboards up all around town and say 25 is coming. This is a high school kid who's going to college. Again, 25 is coming. We're so starved to get you guys here to see our product because nobody is. And basketball here at LSU needs a lot of help. And it's not just at LSU. It could be here in our own backyard. Whenever Marvin Bagley decides to go, if he decides to go to ASU or U of A in 3 years, it's probably going to be the same sort of thing here in state. We already see kids at ASU on billboards. They did the whole stay-at-home thing. But a high school kid saying, this is the way we're going to go with this? It's a little much. One other thing in this segment. So, and I'm going to switch over to the NBA for a second, because the draft order now that's in place on the lottery, and the Lakers have the number 2 overall pick. When free agency starts, Marc Gasol is a name that's out there. And Marc Gasol made first team All-NBA this past week. Marc Gasol is going to be a free agent. And the Lakers, the Spurs, the Knicks, and the Mavericks are all reportedly going to pursue him now on July 1st. If Tim Duncan retires, wouldn't it make sense for Marc Gasol to go to San Antonio? The Lakers, you could put Marc Gasol with Randall when he comes back off his broken leg, Kobe in the number 2 pick. But that number 2 pick, what if the Lakers traded that number 2 pick for a guy like DeMarcus Cousins up at Sacramento? And I bring this up because the Suns are sitting there right now in a really interesting time at number 13. And they are going to have some teams pass them by if they are not active in this offseason. If they're just going to take the approach of, we're going to draft 13 and we're going to see what we get from it, it's going to be an opportunity that's going to whiz right by them. Marc Gasol, somebody the Suns, I think, should go pursue as a free agent. There's not that many big names. We talked about DeAndre Jordan recently. Marc Gasol, LaMarcus Aldridge, all of them are right there. The segment of the show brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Over this Memorial Day holiday, you're looking for that car, you're looking for that truck. It's the perfect time of year because the summer vacation season right around the corner. If you're sticking around the valley and you're wanting to get that vehicle for your summer vacation, Santan Ford, just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista, that is the place to go. General Manager Tim Hovick has a terrific staff. Terrific staff. You need some service on your vehicle this weekend, John Bernath and the service department, they do a great job. But think about a certified pre-owned maybe for your vehicle of choice that you're wanting to go pursue. I drive around the Fusion Hybrid. I absolutely love it. 52.4 miles to the gallon today as I made my commute. Makes a lot of sense for me. How about you? Santan Ford, just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista. Go to santanford.com or click on it on our sports360az.com homepage. On the other side, Bill Goody Kuntz is with us. Goody at the Movies, that's next. And on this holiday weekend, you're going to want to get out to the movies. Time for Bill Goody Kuntz, AZ Central Chief Film Critic, Media Critic. Goody at the Movies. Good to visit with you. Saw you at Tomorrowland the other night with George Clooney. I was bored out of my mind and thought it was an infomercial for about the first 20 minutes. I need to go to Disneyland and Small World. I was a little confused by it, but I leaned over and looked at my 10-year-old, and he was leaning forward in his seat, was very much into it, told me afterwards it was awesome, Dad, other than there was a couple of slow moments. What about you?
I'm somewhere in between you two.
Yeah?
By the way, when you say you were at the movie where you saw me and George Clooney, it was, we were not together.
I saw you and George Clooney. You look similar.
George Clooney just happened to be on the screen.
Yeah, right, right. No, that's a good way to put it.
I liked it. I didn't love it. I thought it was brilliant. I thought one of the things that Disney, I was talking to one of the reps before the movie, one of the things that Disney has really consciously done, if you watch the trailers or anything like that, they don't really want you to know what it's about. And I think that's a good idea. There were times after the movie was over when I still wasn't sure if I knew what it was about. But I thought that what they tried to do was really good. I mean, they challenge the audience. I think I wrote in my review that, you know, heavy mental lifting for most summer blockbusters is trying to remember how many Transformers movies Megan Fox was in. But you know, this actually requires you to sort of, you know, figure things out a little bit. I talked to some other people that thought Clooney was terrible in it. I thought he was fine. I think he's got this goofy thing he does when he does Coen Brothers movies that I don't like, and I like Clooney a lot. I think he's a really underrated actor. But then he'll do something like Michael Collins, which is one of my favorite movies ever, and where he's just great. He's a great dramatic actor. When he does comedy, I think he gets kind of, and this is somewhere in between. And he was all right.
Yeah, but I saw Leatherheads and I hated it.
I mean, I hated Leatherheads. I hated him. And he's the reason I hated Leatherheads. I mean, he's an idiot.
Yeah.
And he does a little bit of that in like some Coen Brothers stuff, and sometimes he doesn't. But, I mean, I think he's a great actor. And I've got to believe that he's somewhere up on the top of everybody's list of guy you would most like to have a beer with.
Well, sure. I mean, when I see George Clooney in the Ocean series, that's awesome. I can't get away from that. I love watching that. The Descendants was one of those that I thought
was great.
Yeah.
Go to revisit Michael Collins. That is one of my favorite movies, where he's a lawyer, but not really. He's like a fixer, and he fixes problems. And like this one guy has a hit and run DUI, some really powerful rich guy. And George Clooney shows up in the middle of the night in the rain or whatever, and he tells him, tells the guy what he's got to do. And he says, you know, the guy says, I was told that you came here to fix things. And George Clooney says, you were misinformed. I'm a garbage man. and then the phone rings, and he says, that's the state troopers. You need to pick it up. I've talked to them already. He says, how do you know it's state troopers? Maybe it's the bad guys or whatever. He says, no, they don't call.
You know, Perfect Storm, I thought he was pretty good. And Three Kings, I hated. You know?
I like Three Kings a lot.
You did?
Yeah.
Really? Wow.
I did.
He's only 54, Bill. George Clooney. I thought he was a little bit older than that.
Oh, and you know, he was a pretty decent baseball player. You can tell that he's athletic and the way he carries himself. You know. But here again, like in this movie in Tomorrowland, I'll tell you here, let's put this out. I like a movie where you can only imagine George Clooney in that role.
Yeah.
And anybody could have played this.
No, that's true. No, you're right about that. And it did have some twists along the way. But I'd say, to me, if people want to go see this movie, take your kids, I think. You know, like 10-year-old's perfect.
Even a little older, I think. I think it makes you, it goes up and down. And it's not, in the end, a big commercial for Tomorrowland because they're not in Tomorrowland all that much.
But they were at first. That's why I was like, come on.
Right.
The first 15 minutes was just painful. Just get it out.
The Clooney as a kid was a cute little guy.
No, he was. He was. All right, let's go over to I'll See You in My Dreams.
Yeah, this makes me sound like it's like the oldest person in the world, but this is just a movie, and it sounds like same phrase, but I don't mean it that way. It's really pleasant. It's just a really nice time at the movies. Blythe Danner, who I think is really underrated, and if you're as old as me, I mean, she used to be really pretty, and now she's still very pretty, but, you know, she's older. And she's Gwyneth Paltrow's mom and all this stuff. But she was in one of my favorite episodes of MASH ever. But she plays a woman, a widow, who, her friends live in a retirement home, and she doesn't want to live there, but, you know, she thinks about it. She goes and she drinks wine and plays cards. And she doesn't know quite what she wants to do with the rest of her life. And then she meets this pool boy, which sounds like the beginning of, like, a porno movie or something, but it's not. I mean, and it's the guy who played Bill in Freaks and Geeks, who is totally goofy in that movie, but has grown up to be, like, you know, quite the hunk. And they just become friends. And it turns out she gave up a career as a singer, and he wanted to be a poet. And they just get to be friends. And then meanwhile, on the other end, over at the retirement community, she becomes friends with Sam Elliott, who is a guy who walks around with a giant unlit cigar in his mouth all the time. You can read into that any Freudian imagery that you want, because I think that's what they're after. It's just nice. It's really well acted. It's really well done. And it's just a cool way to spend an hour and a half in the summer when you're used to having your head beaten in by special effects and stuff. It's just nice.
Speaking of that, we're talking with Bill Goodykoontz. Did you see the number that Pitch Perfect 2 did versus Mad Max? I mean,
yeah.
Pitch Perfect 2 stomped Mad Max. Like, crushed Mad Max.
They practically doubled it.
Well, I mean, what is that all about?
That took everybody by surprise. And come for that. I mean, you know, it was a happy movie. It was a funny movie. But it was funnier than the first one. It was not as original, obviously, as the first one.
Yeah.
I saw somebody write that, well, we had no idea that this was going to turn out to be like the Godfather 2 of acapella movies.
That's a good line.
Yeah, it is. And now I guess there's all this controversy that Rebel Wilson is not 29, she's 35 or something like that, and people are all upset about it. I don't know, maybe I got other stuff going on, you know, that I'm trying to take care of, but I cannot really get it together to care how old Rebel Wilson is.
She's an actress, who cares?
I know, and she's funny.
The pitcher on the mound's 29, he's from Cuba, and he says he's 18, it's fine. Can he get people out? Who cares?
Yeah, now the only trouble you get into there is when it's a little league and he's 19, when he drives himself to the game, and that shouldn't be.
All right, what'd you make out of the final Letterman episode and just putting a bow on Letterman's career?
I loved it. He could have gone out there and just stood there and I would have loved it. But I thought that the top 10 list was great with all those people. I mean, you know, I watched it. I let my kids step and watch it because I thought, you know, you don't know it now, but this is something, and you're not going to see this again. And, you know, my 16-year-old, when at the beginning of the show, she was like, well, did all these presidents show up for Jay Leno going away? I was like, They don't show up. Presidents show up, don't show up for anybody. They showed up for Letterman. And they, Jimmy Kimmel aired a repeat, which I thought was really cool. During night sweeps, when they're setting their advertising rates, Conan O'Brien on his show told people when Letterman came on and told them to change the channel.
Yeah.
Leave my show and go watch his. I mean, that, I don't, you know, and you get taken to task by, like, internet trolls and stuff that, like, Moon was better because he had better ratings. Well, no, that doesn't mean that he was better. But it's, I just think, and maybe we didn't make too much of it. I mean, he is a talk show host, but it's going to be weird tonight to not have that option there anymore. You know what I mean?
Sure, sure. But I think, you know, it's like when MASH went off the air, and granted, that was a series, and that was something that I would go to friends' houses as a kid and see, and now it's still on. You have to search to find it, but I will still find it as comfort food. You're going to have to go find Letterman, and the beauty of where we are in this day and age of digital is you can go find Letterman. You can go just go online and watch Letterman whenever you want, but for those of us that have seen traditional television go away from what it once was to now it's just one of many ways we can go take in media, I don't think it's as harsh. You know, when Carson left, nobody could have gone online to watch Johnny Carson, right? So, yeah, he's not going to be there at a set slot, but I could go Google him at 1 p.m. and watch all the Letterman I want.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true, but there's still something about seeing it as it happens. There's still a little bit. There's that last vestige of water cooler moment.
No, I got that.
And a little bit.
No, and there's not the dominating personality. These guys are all researched out, and these shows are so hard researched out now that I don't think you can do what he did because there's just too many suits in the way. They're saying, well, this is what they want in Ames, Iowa, so we better appeal to Ames, Iowa. That's the problem here, where you don't have that flexibility and that freedom.
Letterman did what he wanted.
That's right.
He had a natural instinct for what worked. I mean, and that's why all these people loved him. That's why people loved working with him. That's why, you know, he was a hard guy to work for, but they certainly didn't have any trouble filling his writing jobs. And, you know, I mean, that, you know, that he is the last of it. People say this all the time, and it's usually not true, but I do think that he's sort of the end of an era, the last of a particular type of host, of personality, of celebrity, of TV personality.
Sure, sure. No, there's, when you see all these guys, whether it's Conan or if it's Kimmel, they're all kind of, Fallon's just a little bit different, but there's all, the set is kind of the same. Everything's kind of the same, right? So
right.
I have no idea what it's going to be moving forward, but late night, it's kind of run together. To me, I can see Letterman popping up with some sort of special in November once. I could. I don't want to see him like the Country Music Awards packaged 50 different ways where there's always a Country Music Awards show on. It seems like every other weekend. But I could see him showing up once somewhere. I can't see him like Carson where he just disappears and ends up writing the jokes and sending the jokes to the guys that are replacing him. I don't see that.
You never know. I mean, you remember, I mean, maybe you don't because I'm older, but you know, Walter Cronkite was going to do these news specials all the time. He was going to do these big long-form news things. We never saw the guy again. And I don't think, there's no way to know. I think that once you get out there and that grind is over, because it really is a grind, I think that you kind of look around and you say, maybe a trip to the beach sounds a little better.
No, I get that. I went through that. I went through that when I did what I did. Not nearly on the same scale, obviously, but just I think when you get in the entertainment business or the broadcast business, it is within your blood, but then you do see that there is other stuff that's out there. It's like Larry King. You know, I'll put Larry King on the show here a couple times a year, and he's still grinding shows out. Yeah, they're in a much harder place to find. But he still sounds great, and his medium still works, and he can still do what he wants to do when he wants to do it.
Yeah, and then that's what if you do go online, what showed up online a lot lately has been, like, from his old NBC show, his third anniversary special, fifth anniversary special.
Right, right.
Something like that could be really cool. But then you kind of also wonder if sometimes if he goes away, does the audience go away? Does the interest go away?
No. That's true. You disappear. You're out of sight. You're out of mind. And if he wants to reinvent himself, he can. I just don't see him doing what Leno's doing. I don't see him showing up in Vegas, and that's not him. I don't see him going around and doing lounge acts and doing corporate things and making big money doing that. He just never struck me as that guy. But
no, he had some success as a TV producer. I mean, I could see him doing more of that. I mean, you know, he produced a Worldwide Panthers company. He produced Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yeah, but think about that, Bill. Think about this, and I got to let you go off this. But think about the numbers of talented people that are sitting on the sidelines, A, because they can, because they've made lots of money, which is fine, but they still have it in them. There's lots of talented people. When you saw who came out on his top 10 list the other night, and you see Jerry Seinfeld is sitting out there off to the side, just kind of doing what he wants to do, and a guy like Letterman is doing what he wants to do, and Howard Stern doing his satellite thing when he wants to do it. There's so much talent that's not sitting there on traditional television anymore, and they're just finding different ways to go about it.
Yeah, and I think in a lot of ways that makes it really exciting. I'm a big fan of that. I'm a big fan of non-traditional media.
Yeah, I'll let you go off that. Stay well.
Okay, you too.
It's Bill Gutekunst, Goody at the Movies, Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. Did we just get really deep there, Bill and I? I mean, Eric, were you? You're not wrapping me on this one.
Yeah, you got pretty deep.
Yeah,
that segment sort of took on a life of itself.
Did you need to pull me out?
It usually does take. Yeah, well, that wouldn't have helped.
It wouldn't have helped?
When you're in so deep, you just have
throw
to go.
Throw me the life preserver?
No, you just have to go.
All right. Sports360AZ.com. AZ Central Sports. We partner with the Arizona Republic. On this Memorial Day weekend, I'm Brad Sussmat. So